Good evening. My name is Thomas Steininger. I welcome you to Radio Wolf, our bi-weekly international webcast for consciousness and culture. Today I have with me in Radio Wolf Dr. Judith Miller. Judith, you are here?
Yes. Hi, Tom. I am definitely here.
Judith, great to have you in Radio Wolf. Thank you so much for coming.
Sure.
If I just may introduce you for our audience, Dr. Judith Miller teaches psychology at the Columbia University Department of Human Development in New York. She's a psychotherapist and a spiritual teacher who facilitates training groups and retreats for seekers around the world. She's an international speaker and writer and an author of two books. One of them is Healing the Western Soul. And Judith, healing the Western soul is exactly the reason why we invited you to our broadcast Radio Wolf. You have an interesting, unique, and quite radical message. You are saying that talking about the Western seeker, that the Western seeker is abandoning his or her own roots, talking about our Western Judeo-Christian tradition and seeking spirituality in the East, Buddhism, Hinduism, different forms of spirituality. And you see this new form of, you may call it a kind of a world spirituality, something problematic. And what you're saying in your book and what you're saying in general is that the Western seeker should in some way come home to his or her spiritual root. Why are you saying this?
Yes, that is true. I'd like to begin by saying I believe that ultimately all spiritual traditions, East and West and North and South, ultimately come to the same place, even though the traditions may have different terminologies and different ways of describing the journey. However, since the New Age movement started, and I guess we're talking about 40, 50 years, what has happened in the West, as you know, is that there's been such disappointment with organized religion that people have abandoned what are really their sacred roots to adapt different traditions that while important and while effective because there's a personal practice involved, my experience is, Tom, that in so doing, they're turning away from something very deep and important in their own process.
I really would like to inquire this, and maybe I'm also a point in case of what you're talking about. If I may speak to you also in a personal way,
sure.
I was educated in a Jesuit school in Austria, and one of my first deep and in fact lifelong spiritual moments was that a teacher of ours, a Jesuit, I was maybe something 14, 15, said, "Hey, Thomas, you're reading already enough. You're engaging your mind enough. Read this." And he gave me a little book. And this book was called Zen and the Art of Archery. And I read this book about Zen, and I don't know how much this book is known in the U.S. It's
Yes, I've heard of it. Yes,
it's very well known in Germany, Austria, definitely. And this Jesuit, who was also my religion teacher, was a very progressive Jesuit. He had in the school, and this was in the 1980s, a meditation room, and he taught us Zen meditation in the Jesuit school. And this opened up for me a whole new universe of spirituality beyond my Catholic upbringing.
Yes.
And I found this a very liberating and powerful experience. You are saying there's something also problematic about going this path. Is that right, or is this a misunderstanding?
Well, there's certainly nothing problematic about the Zen practice, but my experience is in working with spiritual seekers who are very serious in their process through breath work, which is a modality that I've been practicing for many years, through meditation. My experience, Tom, is that when very often when sacred imagery, feelings, thoughts, resonance comes up for them that might, for example, be reflective of Christ consciousness or an image of Jesus or even the duality of darkness and light. Some of these basic themes that are ensconced in our ground of the Western mystical traditions, they turn away from it and they turn away with upset. In other words, they don't want to be reminded of their childhood religion, which was really disappointing to them when, you know, and I understand that, you know, traditional religion doesn't really get to your heart very often. And so they go a different way. But what I have found is, as Carl Jung said, whatever comes up in your consciousness along the way is important for you to look at and take seriously. And then when people make these choices based on difficult backgrounds or even ego identity, that they don't want to be affiliated with that, they get very stuck in their process because nothing would come through their consciousness, I believe, unless it was really important for them to open and access and go through.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying, Judith, is there's nothing wrong about being exposed to Zen Buddhism, for example, or experimenting, doing Zen practice. But what you are pointing to, that because of who we are, the culture we come from, the roots that we have, when we go deep into spiritual experiences, maybe through breath work that you are doing with your students, maybe in meditation, there's an imagery coming up that is related to our cultural environment, to our cultural roots. And this this imagery in us is not just our personal imagery, it's related also to the spiritual culture we come from. And you don't have a choice, so to say, where you're born into. You have, in the same way how you have to accept who you are, you also have to accept where you come from.
That's right. You know, and it's very paradoxical to me, I think, particularly in the U.S. now. You know, there's so much emphasis on people getting very strong and identified with all the characteristics that make them who they are. For example, you know, their race, their sexual orientation, their body weight, their gender, you know, it's all so important. The problem that I have found is when people stop at those external characteristics and they don't go beyond into, you know, what is the core common humanity that we all share, which is our sacred roots and our spiritual identity. You know, there every identity is okay except your spiritual identity. And the other thing is, as I'm sure you know, and living in the U.S., it's our our culture in many ways has begun to collapse. And because of that, belief systems, worldviews, culture identity invariably become confused and chaotic. And there's a lot of research that shows that. But yet there's also the possibility that out of the fear and chaos, there are revitalizing rituals, dreams, and visions reflecting our Western mystical roots that are coming up, and they're just coming up very strongly for people. And I have found that when people open to them and they move forward with them, you know, it's great progress and development and transformation. Mm-hmm. And when they refuse to do it, you know, like I've seen so many times people in breathwork, for example, suddenly there'll be an image of Jesus that will come or the Sacred Heart, and they'll say, what is he doing here? You know, I'm a shaman or I'm a Buddhist, and they cut it off. And I think that has very serious results in their development.
How you experience this in your work? Because I had the honor to participate in one of your workshops, I think something like 10 or 12 years ago in Germany. So I know what you're doing is quite intensive and deep work, and there's a lot of deep stuff coming up. And I understand what you're saying, that if something like Jesus or some Christian background is coming up, that you have to accept that. But isn't it the case that we are living in a dramatically changing world where the spiritual environment that we are living in is not as it used to be anymore, that our reference points are also not the ones they used to be? For example, I have an interesting experience with my partner. We both have a Catholic upbringing. I come from Austria. She comes from Pittsburgh in the U.S. Catholic meant for her in her youth something completely different than in my environment, because basically where I came from, you were Catholic, and there were maybe 2% of the population who were Muslim at that time, from workers from Turkey. That's it.
And right.
The Protestants, Lutherans were less than our friends from Turkey. She grew up in Pittsburgh, where she was living in a neighborhood where basically they were the Catholics, they were the Jewish, and there were some other minorities. Being Catholic was always a pluralistic minority phenomenon. That's a world that is becoming more and more everywhere, the world that we're living in. So this can't be rooted in some really particular traditional context, as I come from, is something that's definitely less and less the case. Isn't that our spiritual identity in this pluralistic world also must become more pluralistic than it used to be?
Well, I'll just share my experiences. And, you know, I'm in the U.S., and I was actually born Jewish. And, you know, I grew up while I would go to the synagogue with my family, there was no real connection for me of a spiritual nature or of a religious nature. And I guess I would call myself comfortably agnostic at that time. But, you know, I had a Jewish cultural identity. And then in my own spiritual process, which I have to say began very spontaneously and not through my intention. I was trained as a psychologist, and you know, that just wasn't part of who I was. And I started to have very strong expanded spiritual conscious spontaneously would come to me, my experiences that came, you know, were, they actually tapped into different traditions. I remember I was a shaman for a while, and you know, I accessed mythology from the collective unconscious and symbolism, and I started to do breath work with Stanislav Grof to try to make sense of all these strange experiences I was having. And you know, as I continued my process, which was very active, and try to put some kind of structure on it through the breath work and meditation, much to my shock, I started having very strong experiences of Jesus and Mary and crucifixion and rebirth. And maybe you don't know what it's like, but for most mainstream Jewish people, you know, any kind of identity with Christ or Jesus, and you know, it brings up a lot of concern and fear and upset, you know, because there's been so much anti-Semitism over the years that, you know, they feel is based in Christianity and, mm-hmm. you know, all that. So it was a shock to me, and it didn't make sense. And it was a struggle personally and spiritually. As it's turned out, this has been the way my path has gone on a very deep level. And the big challenge over the years in my work with people and spiritual seekers, whether they're Christian or whether they're Jewish or any other religion, is when these kinds of deep processes come through them, which is happening increasingly all the time, many of them really resist it because they don't want to go back to their childhood religion. And where I've come, Tom, after all this time, is to believe strongly that there's something about Christ consciousness that is not only important for people that it comes to, but for the Western soul and for the transformation and the future, the evolution of our world. Now, because it's coming up so much for people, you know, it's coming up for people. It's coming up for Jewish people. It's coming up for Christian people. It's coming up for African American people and white people and young and old. And when they follow and open to it, their lives really evolve. And if we really go back, you know, Jesus was Jewish after all. So that whole split was something that, you know, was political and was people-based. And, you know, maybe that's not at the soul level where we should be.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that this is something that for us in the West is just important. And of course, your own story is a particular powerful because you were not socialized Christian.
Yes.
You touched on yourself that having a Christian experience in a Jewish background is problematic just because of the problematic history of Christian anti-Semitism over 2,000 years. So that, and this. So it must be quite something to really kind of first have this experience and then a second to appreciate this experience. But I do understand that this is something that has a specific role for us in the West, because the West is to a big degree built around a Christian culture and a Christian spiritual root. Are you saying that this is something that is specific for Westerners? In that sense that it is more powerful, more important to have a deep realization of love in the Christ consciousness than in, let's say, a Krishna consciousness? Because there are people who have deep experiences, and also people I know from the West, from here, from Europe, who are practitioners of Indian Vedantic traditions, and they do also have in their meditation experiences deep Vedantic or maybe Tibetan or whatever experiences. Yes. So do you say that this is problematic, or is it just basically if whatever comes up is who you are?
No, it's absolutely not problematic. You know, as I say, I'm going back to Carl Jung, what mm-hmm. he said, whatever comes through your consciousness, you should follow. My first book that I wrote in 2000 was really to try to share my experience as a psychologist who mm-hmm. was having these strange experiences that I was having trouble incorporating, and with my profession and with my identity. And what I shared in that book, Tom, was many inner experiences I had, you know, that were shamanic and that were Eastern and that were this and that there were that. And they, and what in my own process I found, and what I've seen in all these other seekers and practitioners, is they all ultimately lead, if you take them seriously, to an open heart and a compassion and love and oneness, that we're all one. I believe that the way that it comes for us has importance, though, and we need to follow it. So, of course, Zen is fine, and Krishna consciousness is fine, and Buddha consciousness is fine, and they all ultimately can lead to that same place, but we need to follow the path that comes to us. For example, when I facilitate breathwork in China and in South Korea, you know, many of these people identify with Buddhism, but amazingly for many, they suddenly start to have imagery of Jesus and the Sacred Heart and maybe even Mary, and that's a shock to them. And so what I support them in doing is opening up their hearts and their minds and their consciousness to whatever comes through and following it. Mm-hmm. And I have seen many people in the East, when they do that, they find these experiences are really transformative. Mm.
So that's surprising to me. If you do, we talked before this broadcast that you are doing seminars in South Korea and in China, and your book even is going to be translated in South Korean, which I found already surprising. That's as South Korean audience is interested in healing the Western soul.
Yes, I know.
And right now you're saying when you're doing the seminars in Southeast Asia, that people there do have also what you're describing as a Christ or Mary experience. How do you explain that? Is that connected to you being there, or why is this the case? Why is that? Because this is not the upbringing. This is not their root.
Yes, I know. I believe that, well, okay, this is my personal sense. Our world is not doing well at this time. And I guess my own personal worldview is that there are certain beings that have come into our world at different mm-hmm. times in history who, whether you want to call them avatars or prophets or mystics or great teachers, they've come and they've had messages and they've had teachings. And of course, that's the Buddha, and it's Muhammad, and it's Jesus. I mean, this is what I think. And I don't think they were just an accident. I think whatever that big source is, these individuals were tapped to make a big, big effect on our evolution and our world. And so we have access to all of this. Everybody in the world has access, a deep soul and consciousness levels that go beyond what particular environment they grew up in. Mm-hmm. And when that comes through consciousness, it's to be taken serious and followed. And the more that we become one world, I think the more there's an opportunity for this consciousness to come through us at different times and different ways.
As you're mentioning the one world, and you were also mentioning in the beginning of our conversation how this leaning to Eastern spirituality was part of the New Age movement that was opening up to this one world.
Yes.
And there's a sense in this New Age spirituality or any kind of, or many kinds of modern contemporary spirituality, that the spiritual experience in the end is one anyway in its different forms.
Yes.
And I guess that's true to some sense, but doing the work that we're doing, I told you a little bit also in our pre-conversation of cultural dialogue, I came more and more also to the impression that we also have to honor the differences. That for, talking, for example, about Zen spirituality and talking about Vedantic spirituality or Christian spirituality, yes, there is something unified in that, but there are also very different tastes, very different characteristics that stay in their differences. Would you agree that yes, there is the oneness of the human experience, but at the same time, also in our spiritual tradition, in the spiritual roots, when we're talking about bringing together a one world society, we only can do that by appreciating that this one world global human society that we are is not one monolithic reality. It lives in the plural experience that we have, and we also have to appreciate the difference of our spiritualities.
Oh, of course, because as I said, you know, I think they all kind of take us to that same place of oneness and connection and open heart and love. But I feel very strongly that the way this comes to us through our consciousness and through our soul and through our psyche, it's not really our decision alone, because spiritual development is a lifelong process. And the more we live, the more we open ourselves, and what comes through, I think we need to pay attention to it and not pick and choose based on what feels most comfortable to us.
I would like to ask you, I mean, you seem to have an amazing story from your Jewish upbringing and the experiences that you have bring you to a deeply Christ-oriented spirituality, to teach this with people, to people in the US, in Europe, but now also people in the Far East, and experiencing this one world that we are growing together, and our spiritual roots that somehow are at a meeting place like it never has been before. It was never that you just go to your computer and you have basically access, not just written access, but audio visual access, basically to any kind of spirituality that you want.
Yes.
That's an unbelievable new situation for all of us.
Yes.
In the way we relate to our deepest soul experiences. So on one hand, you are deeply involved in this plurality of our global spiritual experience. And on the other hand, you make this strong call for Western seekers, you have to come home in yes. order to be part of this. Can you explain how do you come to this strong call? Why is this so important in a global spiritual environment that you so deeply experience yourself?
Because I guess what's most important, Tom, I believe, is for people to respect what comes through them, what comes through their soul, what comes through their consciousness. Follow it, surrender to it, trust it. And what I see more and more and more is that this Christ consciousness is coming through people all over the world. Yes, there's lots of Eastern influences and lots of Buddha, you know, identification, but you know, the important thing is to follow what comes through you and not make choices based on your own interest or intellect. In other words, to surrender to what is here and what is for you. And that's all I'm saying. I don't go to proselytize and tell people what to do or what they shouldn't do. I just follow what comes through them and really ask them to follow and to trust their own soul's leanings. And then it really works, is what I have seen.
So basically your message is not so much come home. Your message is don't resist what's coming up in your own experience, because what is coming up, that's my interpretation of what I hear from you, is what home is.
I guess, to be really honest, I have to say, I think for Westerners, just about all Westerners that I have worked with, and we're talking about thousands, when they stay on their spiritual path, they will hit this point of their roots. And it usually almost always is transformational, and they stay there. I've also spoken in groups where I brought this out, and so many people have come up to me afterwards and say, I've been waiting to hear this for years. I've turned away from what's in my soul because it didn't seem right. And I don't like my church. And it didn't give me anything. But this is where my heart really is. And I hear that over and over and over. It's almost like they felt they didn't have permission to be able to open fully to what was coming through them.
Mm-hmm. It also seems that we have to take into account that there is a particular historical development that we are part of and that we are witnessing. When you are very young, in what at that time was the new age spirituality, there was a new search for something that was a deep spiritual experiences that was kind of lost or buried in our Western tradition. Western mysticism was not alive in the way it maybe was around 1200 in Europe.
That's true.
There was something where people were seeking for some direct mystical life realization that was not easy accessible in our Western traditions. So at that point, it was also reasonable, understandable to just look where is something alive that connects me to spirit in whatever.
Right.
But now we are something like 40, 50 years later, where many of this generation had a lot of experiences in, you said, shamanism, Indian mysticism, Japanese mysticism. But that does not take care of that we have also to liberate our own roots if we want to liberate ourselves.
Yes.
So maybe there's also a historical moment where this opening to the East was important, but it was important to basically get blood into the veins again. And if it has dried out in our own tradition, to look where it is still alive. But then we have to bring it in that sense. It is the home that you're talking about. Bring it home and understand that we only really can connect with spirit when we connect with our roots to spirit. And the roots is that what shows up. And in the West, as you're saying, it's very often also what this Western culture is based on. And it's the mysticism of our Judeo-Christian tradition.
That's right. That is what I have seen. And, you know, it's the more the world becomes complex and difficult and, you know, polarized as it is, the more I see this coming into people's lives in very, very strong ways. And, you know, one thing which is very controversial, but the beginning of my career, I worked with serious mental illness and schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. And I always was impressed and amazed that I would say almost all of the people who have acute psychotic episodes, there's a religious component in it, whether they were agnostic or atheist or whatever they were. And even so that psychiatry calls it religious ideation and grandiosity. And, you know, people are taken, you know, into psychiatric clinics because they have experiences of Christ or the devil or good and evil. And these are splits. It's almost like in what we call serious mental illness, you know, people just go deeply into those processes. They can't handle it. It's overwhelming. It may have nothing to do with their background, but it's almost 100% that this is what psychoses, you know, people with that diagnosis experience. Mm-hmm. And so then psychiatry, when they hear that they're Christ or they're the devil or they're dark or they're light or it's good or evil, they just give them medication and give them a diagnostic label rather than saying, why are all these people experiencing the same thing and what does it mean? And I think what it means is there's something very, very deep in our core that needs to be explored, integrated, expanded on. And for many people, it's so overwhelming that they lose their ground, which to me is a huge tragedy of what is going on in the West now in particular. Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense, Judith. That leads me also to another question that I hear, particularly from many friends who are connected to what you may call shamanic forms of spirituality. Mm-hmm. And that is that our Western Christian tradition maybe in itself has some schizophrenic elements. And what they refer to is that when you look into how mysticism showed up in medieval mysticism, also in Calvinistic mysticism, if you may call this mysticism, that there's a split. There's a split, and the basic split that you may say is maybe a split that is kind of really central to Christian or most of the Christian spiritual experiences is a split between the life force and the transcendence. That the way, at least how the literature about spiritual mystic experiences in the West is seen in the medieval times is that this experience is something where our life forces, as we try to appreciate and include them again, are seen as something that is devilish, that is kind of part of the not divine. Is this something that that you see in your own work? Is it something that you would agree with, that we also have to see that our own tradition is in itself also partly, there's a need to heal our own tradition in that? Or would you interpret this in a different way?
Well, you know, I think that as human beings, where whatever part of the world we live in, as human beings, we have different parts of ourselves. We have our light and we have our shadow. And we go back in human history to caveman times, there's violence and there's evil and there's good. And so this duality, I think, is part of the human condition and part of humanity itself. I have a real problem when people spiritually bypass the darkness and the shadow within themselves, beyond themselves, and don't do the necessary inner work to be able to transform that shadow into the light. That's part of what it means to be in a spiritual process and to evolve and to develop. So, you know, rather, and there are those that say, oh, well, the problem with the West is there's duality, and we all know it's oneness, and it's about transcending those splits. Yes, it absolutely is, but we have to do a lot of work to be able to do that. We have to do a lot of inner psychological, emotional, and spiritual work to get to an authentic place of connection and oneness and open heart. Without an acknowledgement of that, I think it's nothing but words only, which why for me this spiritual revolution for so long has maybe not brought our world to a place that we all hoped it would be.
I very much agree. One question that comes from that, do you see that there is also a need of what I would call a dialogue of different forms of mysticism? Because, for example, we were just talking about shamanic mysticism that really emphasizes much more on, let's say, the incarnated life forces of this life and has not this transcendent perspective the Christian mysticism quite often has. Indian mysticism really often focuses on this non-separation part that's seen differently in our Western traditions. So there are different perspectives that we also have to appreciate. Is there also a learning experience where we have to deeply relate to where we come from, we have to see our own roots, but we also have to see that our roots are partial and don't hold the whole, that we live in a more and more hopefully integral world that can hold these differences in a dialogical way.
You know, you mentioned integral, and it makes me think of Ken Wilber. And Ken Wilber's spirituality, which he came up with a number of years ago, actually is a model that I feel most comfortable. Even though Wilber has been a Buddhist, serious Buddhist meditator for many, many years. He reached a point in the last years where he said, you know, if you're from the West and you don't, you know, really acknowledge the transcendent as other in the second person outside of yourself, there's a real problem. The model that he identifies with, I totally subscribe to, which is the God within, the I am, the transcendent beyond myself that's bigger than me that I surrender to, and the force, the source, the God among us, outside of it, nature, it's all between us, it's energetic. To me, if everybody from whatever tradition could feel that and hold on to that and experience their life and the world in that way, then we would truly be living in, I think, a second-tier consciousness, a world, the reality of which is the sacred, and it would be whole, and it would be one. I think when so many Westerners refuse to see the transcendent as beyond themselves, you know, there's a very narcissistic, self-absorbed ego in that they don't have to surrender or trust, or there's nothing bigger than them. They are the God of it all, And there's no reason for them to surrender, have an ego loss, and believe that there's something beyond them and they're not in control. That, I think, is the big missing link today.
But what you're referring to in Ken Wilber, what he called the three faces of God.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Where you have to appreciate that there is an that you can experience the divine in an I perspective, in a you perspective, and in an it perspective, which described particular this you perspective. And I found it also very powerful when Ken developed this aspect, because it was not an aspect of his work for many years.
Right.
That this you perspective, the divine as the other, is something that was not very appreciated in traditional New Age spirituality, and definitely has a deep root in our Western tradition. That the divine, yes, there is the I am-ness in this.
The I am is there, absolutely, and the all, it's there, but it's also much more than me. And if I can really see that and feel that, then my ego can no longer be in control. And I think there's too much ego in the spiritual movement today in the West, and one of the reasons we're stuck as we are.
It's great that you're bringing this up, because what was on my mind as we were talking, and you're going in this direction, is, of course, and this is so Christian, thy will be done and not mine.
Yes.
And this thy will be done and not mine is the biggest assault that we can have on our ego.
Yes.
Because it is not I am this, which is true also,
yes,
but it is I have to surrender too.
Yes.
And this is a movement that feels sometimes much more uncomfortable than is basically I am all of this, which very easily can be also kind of taken in a very egoic way. So there is something also powerful in this Christian message that is particular Western, to appreciate the otherness of,
yes,
the absolute.
Yes, and to know that, you know, like Taoism, they say there's a natural flow, and if you stay in the flow, you go through your life in a way that you're meant to be. Well, that means to trust and surrender to the flow, not try to control and drive the ship yourself as
right,
the captain.
Judith, unfortunately, we are at the end of our time.
Oh, okay.
Thank you so much. Before we end this broadcast, I would like to let the audience also know there is a website where people can look into your work. It's drjudithmiller.com, where basically all your work is you find out about what you're doing. And also, I would like to mention that the book that we're talking about, The Healing of the Western Soul, is not only in English, an English edition. There is also a German and an Italian edition. And we mentioned there will be also a South Korean edition, but particular for our German audience, there is an edition in German in the Via Nova Verlag. Ich glaube, es heißt Heilung der westlichen Seele in German. And so if people would prefer to read your work in German language, this is also possible.
Sure.
Judith, thank you so much for being on the show here. I appreciate very much your perspective, and also a reminder that our spirituality is not just my personal private endeavor. I'm rooted in something, and the Western tradition is for us Westerners something that we also do have to appreciate. And I think that seems to be the message of your book. And thank you so much for...
Thank you, Tom. It's been really fun. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And a good evening from Frankfurt, Germany.
Bye-bye.